Welcome everyone, and thank you for joining us in our space that we've created today. My name is Gugu Kigaba. I'm a clinical psychologist, and I'm with The Space Between Us. And today we are continuing what we think is a very important conversation. And it's a conversation that we are seeing as really as part of a series of conversations we've started. And we've been trying to unpack this phenomenon that is called trauma. And I think a lot of people use this word, trauma. It's quite pervasive. Everyone says, you know, I'm traumatized. And for the South African people, the South African experience has a lot of things that are quite traumatizing. So we've had conversations that have allowed us to reflect on what it means to experience trauma and the lived experiences of trauma in the South African context. But as we are wrapping up this month of June, where we usually focus on the youth, and we call it Youth Month, because we're honoring some of the heroic and revolutionary, you know, actions that were taken by the youth of 1976, we thought it might actually be a very good time to have a conversation about intergenerational trauma. And we're going to unpack that because we think it's really important to have conversations about trauma that connects us as generations. So we are going to be speaking to two panelists. I've got two guests that I have the honor and privilege of sharing the next, you know, couple of minutes with. We've got Praset Babuset Masibuko, who is a community leader, and I will allow him to introduce himself and tell us about his vast experience, because I feel like I would misrepresent if I even made the attempt. And I've got my brother here, Butuamu Butkatlego Thaba, who is a young actuary.
Yeah, you can just say actuary.
He's an actuary. He has one of those professions that are difficult to explain to gogos in the village. I don't even know how you manage.
I don't try.
I'm joking. Yes, because, I mean, as a psychologist, I know the difficulty as well. It's trying to explain to the gogos in the village, what is it that you do? Uh-huh. So, actuary, I can imagine the types of difficulties you experience.
Precisely.
In trying to explain what that is. So before we start to delve in, and I'll allow you to introduce yourself, I thought a really good place to start was to kind of orientate you to the way we've been thinking about trauma. Mm. And when we had our very first podcast with The Space Between Us, we started off by giving a very broad definition of what it means to experience trauma, right? And we defined it, and we said, when we say someone has experienced a traumatic event, usually it's unexpected, you know. But this event must present with an assault. And when we were being trained, they said it's an assault to your personal integrity. So you see something that assaults your very core, that leaves you feeling helpless. It can leave you feeling hopeless, very afraid. It can immobilize. It can immobilize you, and it can make it very difficult for you to actually perform your functions. And once you've experienced a traumatic event, you experience changes, not just in the way that you are thinking, but you start to see a shift in your feelings. It's okay, why am I feeling in ways that are different to the way I used to feel before? You also start to notice, ukuthi, you get surprised or you get shocked very quickly. Anything yenzakalayo. You're constantly primed for action. You're constantly ready for danger. And it can happen that those feelings, those behaviors, those emotions don't get resolved even after the fact. And you carry that along with you. And you start to notice the impact, not just within yourself. You start to notice the impact in your relationships. It starts to have an impact. You start to notice that your functioning is not the same. Or other people tell you, you know, Butuamu, Baba, you're just not the same anymore. And whilst the experience of trauma is so pervasive, it's something that we don't necessarily always talk about. And sometimes it's because we don't have the language. So we have these reactions to things that are so common. You know, someone comes and they mug you, same. But then we have trauma that we are constantly experiencing through the spaces we live in, through the kind of political environment we're in, through structural experiences, all of which actually constitute trauma. So when we speak now about intergenerational trauma, we're referring to these emotional responses, these thinking patterns, these behaviors that we actually transmit to generations, right? Because that's how profoundly trauma affects us. It fundamentally changes us. You know, when it's at a cellular level, you know, if you are someone who is hypervigilant, you are constantly on the go, you know, you experience it in your body. And let's say your child is observing, Ubaba is always jumpy. It triggers a response for them. They get afraid and they're not necessarily sure what they're afraid of because that's what they've been observing. So when we speak about intergenerational trauma, we talk about the transmission of these emotions, of these behaviors that are actual produced by the experience of trauma.
I feel like I can write a psychology exam right now.
You feel like you could write the exam?
No, thank you for that educational.
Yeah.
Actually, to me, it relates so well. Mm. And it speaks to me.
It speaks to you.
And it also triggers something that says, why didn't I know that it is what you're explaining now? Mm. Maybe I would have then had a way of getting it treated, if it is treated, if we can get it treated. And yeah, let me stop there. But all I'm saying is that it's it's there.
Yes.
And at the age I'm in, you know, after being in jail from the age 16,
yes,
and went through torture, kept in solitary confinement for 18 months in the dark room. And actually we're sitting here, the darkness of the walls here. I sometimes, the others, I worked as a CEO of June 16 Foundation. I could not stay at Hector Peterson's office. My office was at Hector Peterson Museum because it had corridors that were very close.
Yeah.
They were one that time it was just explained as you're just being claustrophobic. And I wasn't. I could still feel the pain of walking through what happened to me when I was in jail. And after that 18 months, having to go to Robben Island and be totally divorced and discarded from what a young person, you know, was supposed to be doing at that age.
Absolutely.
And I was talking to young people the other day saying, guys, you don't know the pain that we've been through. Having been in a situation also on June 16, 1976, of having to, I always say this even in my interviews when I get interviewed, and that this still sits with me, that I led young people out of the classrooms to be killed.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, that alone, you know, other people could see June 16, hey, Sarafina and all that. But to me, it's the day in which I feel like I killed, you know, Hector Peterson, Hastings and Clough. And they could, he could be a grandfather now. He could be, and yeah, so that is what I'm saying. You know, even when coming out of Robben Island after 7 years, I never had an opportunity to heal.
Sure.
I was never invited into a space like this.
Yes.
Where I could pour out.
Yeah.
And even at political level. And so, yeah.
Sure.
And the only healing way that I even use sometimes is speaking about it, particularly with young people when I get to address them and all that.
Yeah.
But all I'm saying is that what you've just said in your intro, so much I say, where does this girl come from?
It's got a name, Gandilendele.
Yeah, and you seem to have said to me, "No problem, yeah, I've been diagnosing you." But maybe I'll come out of here better. I don't know. But
and as I'm listening to Bob Seth saying that, I mean, the first thing I come in here, I'm like, I'm disqualified for this conversation. When you consider what Bob Seth, you know, has gone through, the extreme nature of the pain, of the suffering, 18 months of solitary confinement, unimaginable.
Yeah.
But as he actually verbalizes and puts into context something that has affected him so much, where his focus is the perspective that he led school kids out to be killed.
Yes.
I've never had that perspective when I look at June 16. So it brought to me two points: that there's a personal nature of trauma.
Yes.
And the embarking on a great feat does not make you immune to trauma.
Absolutely.
So sometimes I might look at myself, or we might look at a person who achieved something great, and we focus on the end result, but ignore the fact that the journey could have been traumatic.
Yes. You know, and I would like to validate both points that you've raised, because, and maybe just hop on the last point that you've made about the personal experience of trauma, the personal narrative that each person has, because there's just no comparing them. So the experience of Babu Seth would be very different from your own experience and does not in any way invalidate anything that would have made you feel traumatized, even if it's different to what Babu Seth has said. Because we need to recall, you know, you were 16 years old.
Yes.
And the one thing that you say quite correctly is, you know, I'm thinking about this, that as a 16-year-old, I was doing things that a 16-year-old shouldn't be doing.
Exactly.
Yes.
And the pain of it all is also having to go through torture that was in my look back. I was not supposed to have been tortured that way.
Absolutely.
And I was supposed to be treated, call it down, and not a child maybe has done something wrong, you know, given a whip and all that. But even very people, you know, we counted 188 bodies lumped up at the mortuary in Baragwanath Hospital. This is 16-year-old doing that. And can I tell you, I had just turned 16 on the 15th of June. And so it was... tell young people all the time and say sometimes, you know, why did you do it, Seth? Why were you not going out to play with other kids? And the question is, if that space, that time, and the system that was, you know, that time, that system was saying, you can't go and play. It was saying, you must go and fight. And I still go back and say, you know, today, I can't hold family together. My family is out there. I still believe in being alone. Because most of the time, I would step on their toes. And on a simple thing, like for instance, don't switch off the lights. Don't bang the door. Sound of keys. And the something else.
Yeah.
These are some of the things that one says. I took my daughter, my two daughters, and son to Robben Island. My youngest daughter is angry after discovering where I was for 7 years. So when you're talking intergenerational, you know, trauma. Mm. It traumatized her.
Mm.
She's very bit. You wouldn't have her as a boy, as a girlfriend. Mm. I can assure you. So what is happening with me being not able to even maintain my own marriage,
mm.
it's happening to my daughter.
Mm.
Mm. And I start sitting back and saying, well, you know, sometimes even when you look at the political situation now, the country says, was it worth it?
Mm.
And you come up with that. And these, as you say, these legal jump ups, mm. you know, there's a car stopping outside next to my house. I'll jump out of my first.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the police coming to arrest me.
Sure.
Mm.
And so it's an abnormal life, and I'm
mm.
getting, you know, so much, you know, having to talk about it.
Absolutely.
And then you start asking yourself, how many other Seths are out there who went through? Mm. Because I was not the only one.
Mm.
And what generation,
mm.
what are we transferring
yeah.
to these young men?
Mm.
Maybe we're transferring that anger,
mm.
maybe we're transferring that trauma, mm. and I even at some point, maybe the violence that we see
mm.
might be coming out of us.
Mm.
And that's another guilt mm. that one goes around with.
Mm.
But yeah. Let me not talk too much. I must stop me.
No, I'm not going to stop you. This is exactly the platform
for
the talking.
I've never heard this. Mm. But,
listening to you is just incredible.
Yes.
Know. But yeah, it's as I say that I even look at, you know, Mapara and all those mm. things. These kids were taking drugs and all that.
Mm.
And then I said, maybe. If I was that age at the time, I would have gone that route.
Mm.
Maybe it calms them down all.
Mm.
But I'm not
mm.
a psychologist, but mm. I'm trying to say, why didn't I find the space, the time to heal? I came back from the island. And I was, somebody called it mental hallucinations.
Mm-hmm.
I would wake up in the middle of the night screaming.
Yes.
I would sometimes, you know, they say these young people with nyaope, they don't like to wash.
Mm.
I used to stay
yeah.
dirty the whole day.
Mm.
And now that I'm here today with you,
mm.
it explains it why it happened that mm. way. And it was the life. I was telling someone that we also... I go every June 16 in the morning.
Mm.
You know, I go to the cemetery
mm.
to visit some of the graves.
Mm.
And to me, it is, I owe you guys.
Mm.
And I caused your death.
Mm.
I really feel like I've killed.
Mm.
And, but, I don't know.
Yeah. What you're reflecting on is something that's very important, and you've made a lot of points that necessitate these kinds of conversation. So the one thing you keep saying is, you know, why didn't I get space to heal? Right. So in the at that time, the order of the day was that there wasn't really a chance to stop and think, right? Such that you even realize, Wootsie, what I'm going through is something that requires help. You know, I don't know if that makes any sense at all. Because mm-hmm. if the agenda is so urgent, and you were saying, well, I was not doing things that other 16-year-olds should be doing, because at that day and age, the agenda was saying 16-year-olds need to get up and fight. So the trauma for me in your story doesn't sound like it started at Robben Island. It feels like it would have started even prior to that. So even when we are speaking about the intergenerational nature of trauma, you would have come from people also who had been disenfranchised by the system. And that's what would have even propelled you to even find yourself as a 16-year-old, leading other 16-year-olds, mind you, who had the same intent and same vision as you did. And so this experience, this, we can call it survivor's guilt of sorts, to say, you know, but I'm here and you are not. Mm. You know, and it almost feels unfair because we were all there, and yet here I am now. And then you can now start to recount, oh, here's what it did to me. You know, when you and Uputkatleho have a chance, you can even have a chance to reflect on another conversation we had about trauma, about how the brain actually kicks in when we are traumatized and it tries to protect us. So when we are having those responses to jump, that's your brain having kicked in and released some hormones that says, get out of here so you can get out of harm's way. You know? But when the torture is constant, at which point do you stop producing these hormones that say, get out of here? So it means you are constantly ready for the harm, isn't it? And in that sense, you know, that's what we observe. And it's collective and it's shared, even though it's so unique to your own personal experience. So the one thing that is coming out, the issue of blaming myself, you know, what was I thinking? What was I doing? You've heard of that thing that says hindsight is, you know, 50-50.
Yeah.
At that moment, there is this, what we call the deactivation of the part of our brain that helps us to think and be logical when you have to survive.
Mm.
When you've moved out of the dangerous situation, then that brain kicks in, and that's the one that starts to make you judge yourself. Oh, what was going on? What was wrong? You know. And you can start to question even the value of the contributions you've made to our history.
Mm.
And maybe this is why you were saying, Gumutsi, I mustn't call you a hero.
Mm.
Whereas Katleho and I are sitting here as beneficiaries of your behaviors that day, you know. And I think it kind of does then maybe bring us to your experiences, Katleho, as people that are beneficiaries. So your generation catapulted this movement, e-transformation. Here we are accessing all the things that Hobab Seth couldn't, you know. So tell us about your story and your journey.
Yeah, listening to you, to Hobab Seth, you become eternally grateful. I mean, you mentioned that now, but the reality is I'm not sitting here. If Hobab Seth, the youth of 1976, don't do what they did. And that does not discount, only, you know, put aside the trauma that they've endured, that Hobab Seth still feels to this day. Yes, you know, hindsight is 20/20 vision, as you're saying, Gugu. But when you think about it, the benefits that flowed out of what they did are immeasurable.
Yeah.
The opportunities that we have new challenges, for sure. But there's certain things, there's hope that would not exist, Hobab Seth, for millions in this country, millions, over different generations since 1976, were it not for the actions that were taken, you know. But just quickly on your question, I mean, my journey is one where, even as I was thinking about this conversation, I'm like, am I even qualified for this conversation? And the one part is where I am now, having this conversation, this privileged conversation with this beautiful setup, you know, in a studio. I look at that and I appreciate the privileged position I'm in, where I can travel, I have a car now, and I can look at the current state, but that's the one side of my life. That is the latter part, or the current situation I'm in. But then when I take a moment and reflect where I come from to get there, some of those, you know, traumatic experiences that I never knew were traumatic, I guess they just didn't feel right at the time. I just didn't have the language, as you did say. I mean, for example, one quick one was, I still remember to this day, I have visual of that moment just because of financial difficulties in my family. When I was in grade 7 going into grade 8, which is high school, my teachers in primary school were clear to us. I was one of, you know, like top 15 to top 12 letters. They said, none of you should go to that school. So they pointed to a school that was neighboring our school back in Lebohom. And the reason was because of how notorious that school was. Learners outside classrooms, Hobab Seth, during schooling hours, police vans rushing in because someone stepped another as part of, you know, the learners stabbing each other. There was just so much anarchy.
Yeah.
But because of financial challenges, I remember to this day, my first day in grade 8, I was standing right in front of that school gate, having to step in. It didn't matter how I performed when I was in primary. At that stage, money was the issue. And so because of money challenges, I had to step in. I mean, my fellow schoolmates from primary who knew how I performed in primary were shocked. What are you doing in this school? And so I still remember that as, you know, vividly as I can to this day. But it translated when I also found myself, you know, transitioning into the working environment where, you know, if I find myself in moments and in settings where I need to rely on somebody else, where I don't have something, and particularly in my first couple of years of working, I didn't drive, I couldn't afford to get a car at that point in time, and these other things that flowed out of that, we might touch on them if we get a chance. But that experience of feeling the pain emotionally of lack and of being limited, I have to jump into a train at 8 p.m. in Cape Town because I had to work late so I don't drop the ball for my employer. But now I'm taking the risk of getting into, you know, a train at 8 o'clock. And one of the incidences, I was actually, I had a knife stuck into my throat because of one of the of those trips. And so it makes me see the impact that at the time, not having adequate financial resources meant. That was my first month of working before my first salary. So it's been a number of those sort of things that when I look at that part of my life versus where I am now, I look at that and I see that not only did I suffer, but there's still a lot of young people who come from a similar position and situation that I come from who have to enter the workplace without support, with serious situations of lack, needing to find money for rental, or they're even going to squat, etc., and that need to deal with that at that point in time. And that becomes, you know, something that can be traumatic for them. And how do I help?
I mean, the one thing I found, you know, that stayed with me as you were talking is that you were saying, well, I didn't realize it was traumatic for me at the time. And I'm wondering, you know, how you made sense of it at that time then? What did you... What can you then associate with that particular time, whether it's emotionally or what was going on for you?
I think there were a number of things. I think sometimes the suffering, the trauma, produces in us resilience, right? And in those moments, you figure out things that help you along in the journey. So for me, there was a couple of things, one of which is my faith. I'm a Christian, I'm a believer, and I became a Christian at around age 11. What that did for me is that it just entrenched a strong sense of belief that things will work out. And, you know, in my case, that, you know, believing Jesus Christ, that he will see me through. It doesn't matter how messy and complicated it is. I didn't have language. I didn't have understanding of certain things. But I just had this tremendous belief that things will work out. Even in that school that I ended up in that didn't perform, you know, we had 100 learners in matric. Only 50 qualified to go, well, past matric in my matric year. 12 qualified to go to university. I wasn't greedy, but I needed a lot of distinctions to get admitted for the course that I studied. So I ended up with 6 of the school's 8 distinctions. But when you look at that and that setup, for me it was because of belief. And then secondly, the resilience that was built up because of those challenges, others that we won't have time to cover here from a family standpoint, I started learning to say, how do I focus on solving the problem? How do I focus on the next thing? So I never got caught up or stuck with what has happened. So I'm always saying, okay, how do I get to the next level? How do I fix this? How do I solve this? I didn't even dwell on the trauma. That's why I never even realized that, you know, sometimes it's useful to speak to a psychologist, but that's one of the things. So some of the things that I found became my way of dealing with things. And in the workplace, it meant that I had to and learned to absorb a lot of things, absorb a lot of pressure in cases where sometimes maybe I shouldn't have. Maybe it was something that needed to be addressed. Maybe it was an issue that needed to go to HR. But for me, I never learned that to be an outlet. I needed to figure it out by myself, find a way to make it work. That became the way I operated.
You know, you were talking about, for instance, a trauma before the trauma of 1976. My home, we were 13 in a two-room house. the kitchen cum dining room, there were four of my aunts. And then I'm sleeping on the floor, on the floor, just next to the stove. They are sleeping with their children. How do I get out of the situation when I still have to be at school? When I have to boil water in the morning to be able to take my bath. And the bath is in the toilet outside. In this cold, I'll be carrying water into the bathroom. I'm sorry, into the toilet. And then get, then I'll, and then I'll walk. You're talking about getting into the train. Then I would walk from Orlando East to Orlando West, you know. And you put those things together. And then I'm starting to even look back and say, no, man, this trauma started then well before that. But the other thing, it is the post 1976, post
democracy. Yeah.
Where you still see some people living this life. And that is why I say maybe the other thing then, that the guilt comes in, that there's something I did wrong.
Was it worth it?
Yes. Yes. And you know, just the other day, I was talking to some young people around my home. I'm still in Soweto. I'm still a gassy old man. I was saying to these guys, wait. Do you wake up in the morning and stand outside there and have a beer in the shipping very early? They told me something that reminded me of my past. He said, Bab Masbu, I stay in a shack. So when I'm coming here to sit at 7, it's because I'm giving time for my wife and kids to take a bath.
Yeah. And you know, this is important because when you were speaking and you said, you know, you've become resilient, sometimes I have a problem with how we've defined or we've come to unpack what resilience is. Is it not maybe a denying of those feelings that we've had over time? I think sometimes it gets misused.
Yeah, I hear you.
Because Ubab Seth is describing a pattern where You've kind of had to dissociate or just remove yourself from the trauma of the day in order to keep doing. So that's what you were describing.
Yeah.
I never dwelled on it. I just kept doing. I focused on the next thing to solve. And, you know, this gentleman, they've just decided this is going to be the logistical arrangement that I'm going to make. But in doing so, and it goes back to that definition, you would see, something that's traumatic is something that's an assault to my personal integrity.
Exactly.
So as I'm standing outside now in the cold, you know, waiting because my family have to take a bath, what's happening to me? You know, what do I think about myself? What do I feel about myself as a provider, as a man of this home? So all of those things that we're describing, they speak to a form of violence that is not overt. Like someone putting a knife in your throat, as you spoke about. But a sort of violence that seems to be pervasive, institutionalized, and is structural. The spaces we still occupy. The injustice of knowing that the resources should be available to all, but they're not. And then the response is similar. It's as tangible as someone actually coming at you with a knife. Because when you see the injustice, same response. Heart rates, you know, baby headache, you know, all those other things that happen or can happen when you have someone attacking you physically. So it's such a broad and expensive topic, and you qualify to be in,
you know,
in this conversation.
Other day, you know, the other day, people that I do community work with, they would say to me, why do you send WhatsApp at 2 a.m.? What are you doing?
I would ask that question.
2 a.m., you're telling us about work, you're telling us about all those things, you're telling us, let's meet, how was my day, and all. Why are you doing the time? Why are you taking such a lot of wine? Ah. You didn't hear that.
Yeah. No, we will definitely talk more about that. I just want to quickly see if we have some comments, because I know we've got people that are joining us in the space, and it would be really great to hear some of the views from the people that are joining us tonight. Hear your thoughts, your questions, your contributions to this conversation. Okay, so we've got a message that says that we have a lot of baggage as a people. Can Google please tell us how we begin to heal? So this person is not wrong. I think we can only touch on the tip of the iceberg, but we've got a lot of baggage as a people. We've got a lot of baggage as South Africans. We carry with us some things that we still haven't really defined. And I think one of the things that we try to do, at least by creating spaces like this, is letting it out, giving it a word, describing it, and validating our experiences, right? Because a lot of the time, especially when we're speaking about injustice of sorts, it's that knowledge that I'm going through something, but nobody's aware, and no one is really addressing it. So sometimes, even if we can't come up with practical solutions here, we always have to start at the point where we say, even the feelings that I felt are valid. Even those thoughts that I thought, you can now reflect on them and say, you know, some of them are actually unfair. If you think about, in Babu said this situation, the 16-year-old at that particular time could only make the choices that were available to them at that particular time. And so you can then, through that, start to adopt a lens of more compassion towards self and your own experiences. And whilst that might not be the fix, it's a start. And the conversations that we don't have, often because we're scared of what will come up, often actually start the healing journey. Because they help you to become aware of your own reactions, you know. I mean, when we think about treatments in psychology, we talk about the treatment or healing being on a continuum. Because we understand that you're not going to come and feel great after, you know, years and years of distress. But the one space of consciousness raising, so becoming aware, can be so enlightening. Because one of the things it does is it tells you, shoot, I'm not crazy. So all of the things that I was thinking, you know, all these things I've been wondering about, someone else has experienced them too. So it normalizes it for us. And because it's an experience that's been experienced by someone else and it's named, it feels like something that can be addressed.
But let me just find out how... I'm just trying to also pick up from the baggage stuff.
Yeah.
How do you respond to this, that some of the people that caused this trauma, you still see around?
Sure.
And they're given even platforms, some of them, of being called honorables.
Hey, Bob Seth, you just changed the temperature in the room.
What? You see the person who banned Galata in the Eastern Cape now entering parliament and say, honorable. And you see your own comrades hugging and kissing that person. How do you sit down taking the baggage story and look around you, maybe for people who are no more like in a Kasi environment, would have something that has, they've got goggles on, they've got dark glasses, they don't see. You say, this is where I was. Do I wish this for any other one? I don't wish a 16-year-old to get arrested. It then takes me back to my age. How do you respond to this? As I'm sitting here, I'm on a 10,000 rands bail.
Yeah,
I'm serious.
Oh, okay.
I was arrested for leading a march against ESCOM.
Okay.
With senior citizens that were crying out. Then you say, by the way, I was arrested at that time for fighting injustices. I'm still getting arrested for fighting injustice. How, you see how double traumatized a person can be. And you walk around those people. You walk around these experiences. And I was in an interview day before yesterday where I was asked, you know, there's an area called Kliptown around Soweto.
Yes.
You know, and Kliptown, there's a Walter Sisulu Memorial Site where there's also celebration or commemoration of the Freedom Charter.
Yeah.
That place is vandalized. I was asked, you know, as a community leader, how do you respond to this, that a place that is supposed to be a place of honor, of heritage, and is vandalized? I said, don't ask me that question. Ask the people who are staying in those shacks if they find it even relevant to even commemorate or celebrate the space.
Yeah.
To them is, let me find a room to sleep, then I'll sleep, you know, in that museum or whatever. So these are some of the things when you see where I'm really saying it's difficult for some of us to heal. Because these things that traumatize us, they come back when you see them happening around you. But because we never wanted to be quiet at that time, you still cannot be quiet now.
Yeah.
And does that heal me? No. Maybe what can heal me, it is when, you know, you're asking me, why don't I go back to KZN? and maybe, yeah, maybe I should. But am I not going to see what I'm seeing? There was time in this country where violence was not, violence in this country was institutionalized and pre-apartheid. And we still see some traits of it. Tell me what happens when the fees must fall and all that. So all I'm saying, how does one heal whilst he sees the repeat of what traumatized him? That is what my problem is. And that is where sometimes other people might... I never thought it was trauma. I thought it was anger. I thought Sylvia angry. No, on a serious note. I thought, no, that's why I'm saying I'm happy that I'm here today. I can call it trauma. Maybe to make me feel good and not call it anger.
Well, I suppose the anger can be representative of many things. And what you're speaking about now is the anger about the injustice. And again, it's that comparison that might be contributing to the, you know, the overwhelming response to the injustice when you observe it. Because like you are saying, it kind of builds on, or at least touches on, something that hasn't healed yet. But I suppose when you reflect and say, well, you know, now maybe I see, oh, honorable, but does it mean that given the choices, and we're going back to that 16-year-old, you would have chosen differently at that time? And I seriously doubt it. So the response that can contribute to the overwhelming, you know, response to the current injustice is that comparison, because it almost makes it seem as if the 16-year-old you knew that this would be the outcome of having people that you thought would be honorable not being honorable anymore, but the 16-year-old you didn't. You know.
And yeah, I agree with that. I mean, if I'm listening to you, Gugu, explain that. I mean, it just, I think it's a word that was just ringing in my mind, Babseth, that there's power in forgiveness. And it's not an easy thing. You know, many of us have stories, have relationships where for one reason or another, we've had to forgive. You know, I have a relationship in my life where it induced so much trauma for me personally to a point where all I wanted to do is make sure the individual is nowhere near me. And I don't want to associate with them, etc. But what I found is that that didn't give me healing. Just because the person is not around alone was not enough to give me healing. And it is very telling, because some of the people who perpetrated trauma, let's say to you, Babseth, might not even be alive, let alone those that you're seeing doing certain things in the media that are still around. And so does it mean that because they're no longer around, you can't have healing? And for me, personally, from the experience I had, my healing really started coming through when I truly decided for my own sake that I'm forgiving the person. And the person didn't ask for forgiveness.
Mm.
And I think for me, that became really a life-changing moment emotionally.
Mm.
And where I can then see the person do whatever they're doing, and it doesn't bother me anymore. And you see it also in other spaces. You know, when we look at why should a 16-year-old be doing that?
Mm.
You know, one of the things we were selling to young people in our country, and that's where the next trauma is, you know, go to school, work hard, then you'll get a job.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm.
They did, right? Mm. They went to school, they worked hard.
Yeah.
But there's no job.
Mm.
Mm. How should they deal with that?
Mm.
And for me, I experienced a version of that. Mm. It was work hard, study hard, and then you will be fine to go to university.
Mm.
I worked hard in the setup that I was in,
mm.
got the marks that I got, my 6 distinctions, 279%,
mm.
but there wasn't a buzzery. I even called those large entities mm. that I had applied to for buzzery. I applied to anything that moved for a buzzery.
Mm.
And I said, these are my results. They look good. But they said, no, still.
Mm.
And I had to find my way to UCT,
mm.
traveling from Limpopo to Cape Town, find the money for that,
mm.
and hope that I will find a way to finance my studies at UCT.
Mm.
And so it was still the same challenge that I was facing, even though it felt like I did the right things.
Mm.
So sometimes it's not even that you've done anything wrong, Baba. It's
mm.
sometimes the circumstances are what they are. So I had to learn to see even those organizations, those individuals that I spoke to at those organizations
mm.
who still shut me down, I can forgive them enough that subsequently I could even work for them
yeah.
and help generate value for them.
67 children
mm.
get sexually molested
mm.
by a security guard at the gate
mm.
of a school.
Mm.
Grade 4?
Mm.
Grade 3.
Yeah.
The school is around my community.
Mm.
Then jumps in.
Yeah.
What happened to me
mm.
at that age?
Mm.
And when I was tortured,
mm.
to me, this man
mm.
was like, you were torturing these kids.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
That man goes to court, and the next thing is free.
Mm.
How then I'm expected as a community leader play the part of healing to these kids and their families.
Mm.
Instead, it becomes difficult because I want revenge.
Mm. Mm.
And that then
mm.
takes me to a position where I'm saying, good Lord, I think I've got to hide myself somewhere.
and yet you don't take revenge, though, Babu said. You don't take revenge. And so there are some of these, you know, it's because we're not dealing with something that's an easy fix here.
Yeah. Yeah.
When we talk about trauma and its multiple sequelae, whether they become, you know, emotional or physiological or, you know, behavioral. This is not a linear thing when we're talking about how do we heal. And the challenge with trauma is that we have the challenge of trying to heal within an environment that still presents us with challenges, right? That still presents us with, you know, spaces that still violate and are unjust. And I think if we reflect on the question of the day, really, which has been, well, how do we begin the process of healing? We start to recognize some of the things you've both touched on, but not very directly, where you are saying that even in the traumatic experiences, there seems to be opportunities in either way, right? Because we can all agree that when we experience a traumatic event, it can change the trajectory of your life.
Mm.
It can change your story. It can take you in directions you've never imagined, right? But in some ways, these events can stimulate behaviors that take you in a different direction.
Mm.
When you say, well, you know, I was stuck, there were no buzzeries, but I was prompted towards a different action. And I think when we reflect on what other things we can put in place in order to heal, with the understanding that healing is not linear
mm.
and might be a project that we are working on continuously as the South Africans at least, that we start to look at what's in front of us, what's before me that I can manage right now
mm.
in order to avoid succumbing to the overwhelm.
Mm.
Right? So how do I acknowledge and really appreciate my efforts in spite of all these other challenging things that keep on, you know, throwing to my face, you know, the fact that things are not, we're not in utopia. We're not where we nearly thought we would want it to be at this point in our democracy. But how do we also take the behaviors that we've done in the past and use them to inform the trajectory of hope, such that we use that again as a weapon against the overwhelm? Because I think the opportunity that trauma does give us is, when we reflect at least, the awareness of just how strong we can be,
mm-hmm.
of just how innovative we can be,
mm.
of how compassionate we can be,
mm.
even within our limitations. I mean, when we were having our conversations without our viewers in the room, you were listing a whole range of activities that you are still involved in that do not constitute revenge, but rather are a continuation of the revolutionary behaviors that, you know, started when you were 16, and they just continue, but in a different form, right? So when we have these conversations, we're not having them because we're wanting to, you know, discard that experience, but we're saying we also want to have them so that we can recognize and validate that those experiences were traumatic and they were not okay. And the experiences we've had as younger people who are beneficiaries,
mm.
are none better. So if I'm also traumatized in a professional environment just because I'm supposed to be a beneficiary, it doesn't mean I'm not supposed to talk, right? Because that's sometimes the challenge we sit with. It's, oh, how can I complain when Abu Babu Seth had that? But these are the challenges of my day, right? And they're traumatic for me as well. So how do we have these conversations such that we open up the space for connecting?
Mm.
And when we do that, we shift the narrative about the being debilitated from trauma, and we can create empowering narratives, right? So we learn from this story, and here's what we gathered. And when we can identify our emotions, we can identify the behaviors that are a result of the trauma, we can do differently. We start to break the cycle of transmitting these unhealthy behaviors, these unhealthy habits, these unhealthy compulsive reactions, right? Because when something is compulsive, it means you can't really stop it.
Mm.
But when you can acknowledge, it's, oh, okay. So when I did that, that was because I got touched. And it reminded me, the room reminded me of being enclosed in a space that I didn't like. And I noticed that afterwards I withdrew from people in my family. Now I can go back to my family and say, you know, when I'm in dark rooms, it reminds me of that time. So when I withdraw, it's not because I hate you. It's because I need a moment to just process. I'm remembering what happened to me. Right? And that's an invitation rather than a pushing away.
Mm.
Right? So I suppose in response to the question really of how do we heal, you know, let's start there. We're talking and having a different conversation, right? Rather than the focus on the actual events, but the things after, or things that happen as a result of the events.
And I would even say, I mean, looking at how traumatic a particular experience has been for me, now that we even have the language to be able to identify it, is a powerful place to be, Bab Seth, as well, because you mentioned the word compassion. And you mentioned earlier questioning, is it really resilience? Or are we, you know, sugarcoating, ignoring what has really happened in that experience? Because one of the things that I realized in my journey, particularly in the professional setting, is when I see certain things that now I can call traumatic, happening in someone else's life, mm-hmm. who maybe is joining the workforce, who's maybe a graduate from university, mm-hmm. I feel the emotions rising up from within. Mm-hmm. And I don't like the way the mm-hmm. person has to suffer. Mm-hmm. Because I remember mm-hmm. how it was mm-hmm. when I suffered. And, you know, I feel like...
That's what happens with me when I see these kids going through, when I see these families having to get out of their rooms and stand outside there. Then you know, it's like reliving that part.
Exactly.
And sometimes you wish, let me move away from this that reminds me of where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
You know, you... Then, as you say, the positive side of things, then it'll say, okay, let me work with young people.
Precisely.
And I work with young people now called June 16 Brigades.
Mm-hmm.
The 67 children, they look after them, giving psychosocial support and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and, but the other problem, I think, I hope I'm not going to become too political here, is the perpetrator. You said someone... The perpetrators are still there, some of them around you, and you live with them, and you see them, and some of them, they live in glory, having brought this, you know, pain to you, and then you start saying, why? You know, Peace and Reconciliation Commission, I hate it. I hate it. No one said and agreed. I never went there. And no one's agreed to that. I traumatized these people. No. Die Kerk. I'm becoming emotional, sorry. But Die Kerk did it on his deathbed. But when he was in the Truth and Reconciliation, it was now. I didn't do it. Imagine the other trauma is causing. This man, I cannot ask him question now because he's dead. I cannot ask him what he did to me. And people thought, and let's look at, for instance, the other positive side. I got my matric behind bars. I got my degree in education behind bars. That I hold him to those. Don't touch those two.
Yeah.
Via my little glory out of, you know, the pain, I found this prosperity. So leave it to me.
Yeah.
Now, all I'm saying is that, again, what I would want a situation at some point, this conversation should be, how do you deal with the reminders? How do you deal even with those that you know did this to me? And when you see them do, when they come in this way, take the corner, when they're in this room, move out, as you're saying, and do I say, okay, I love dear people, and I'll be more embracing, but do it to me in a manner that it must also heal me. I must not be expected to be the one making you feel comfortable that now you did this and somehow you're escaping it. I think that's another level, I think, and I was going to ask that maybe at some point we should deal with in this conversation and say, how do you deal with the perpetrators? How do you deal with the situations that led you into this? How do you deal with it?
And also maybe the managing our expectations in terms of what do we know about the awareness of the perpetrators? You know, do we know that they have this awareness that they did that to you, such that they would take steps in order to come and say, you know, Babset, I'm sorry. You know, one of the things that happen is that when we do experience adverse reactions or adverse experiences, it, just like I said, it has such a fundamental and profound effect on someone that even a perpetrator can be traumatized by the act of being perpetrating. Perpetrating.
That's next level.
You know, it traumatizes me that I've had to, you know, kind of negate my own humanity in order to do things because I felt like the system pushed me to that. So there's the story there that we don't have access to. And I think that's why the conversations are so meaningful and can be so insightful because it gives a perspective that you would have never really expected. But it then gives us the challenge of, you know, how do we manage again what's in front of me within the realm of my control? If Gugu is not aware that she hurt me, is there an opportunity for me to make Gugu aware? If I do and she still doesn't acknowledge it, what does it mean for me? What is within the realm of your control? Because you are aware what happened to you. Is that not the story that matters and counts?
Yeah.
And when you can do the acknowledging of my pain and say, yani, yeah, it shifts the perspective. It gives you a new plate of choices because you're not waiting for Gugu in order to heal. You're not waiting for me. I see there were some questions again on the Twitter from our audience. Katleho, someone is directing this to you. If you're experiencing trauma in your workplace today, in what form and how do you try and deal with it?
That's a very difficult question. I think it varies. I mean, even as I was contemplating on this discussion that we have, it has been different at different places. Right now, we're just referring to, you know, the triggering effect of certain things that you endure. And so what I'll see, let's say, for example, I'll be interviewing candidates or I'm involved in processes where I get to know what people are getting through, are going through, what it takes for people to get to certain levels, to come into our premises. It reminds me of what I've endured. And so it's almost like a reliving that you referred to, as referred to Bob said. And what it has done for me, and you're touching on this, is perhaps, I don't know, perhaps it contributes to the healing journey. That how do I, in positions that I have that are influential, ensure that in how we do things, the setup we have is less likely to instigate and push through and perpetrate the same types of traumas I've experienced, and be sensitive to people who might experience what I experience. I'll give you an example. One of the things that it sounds silly and funny, but which was traumatic to me when I went into the workplace, was we would have all these, you know, workplace-related activities like team builds. But the problem was, in my first year, 3 years, I didn't drive. I didn't have a car. Couldn't afford it at that time with all that relates to supporting family, etc. Now, the problem is that when we have a team build, it would be a very specific location, like Hermanas. I was in Cape Town at the time, Baba. So all these exotic locations, you don't just rock up there. And it was the question of, how do I get there?
Yeah.
But for me, there was a humiliation associated with, I have to ask somebody to say, can I catch a ride with you?
Yeah.
And one of the people will say, no, I'm going to have to pass through my kids' school. I have to drop them off. Then I need to go to the next person. And, you know, there's that sense of, that's a bit humiliating for me. It reminds me of what lack has done for me. It reminds me of that moment where, because I didn't have money, I had to walk through that school gate, right? So now what it puts on me as an honors, as a responsibility that perhaps helps me heal, is to be proactive around those situations. When I know we have graduates in our team or where we work, and we have this sort of a setup, rather than waiting for them to figure it out and do the conversation of, I'm going to ask this person, I'm going to ask this person. I can arrange with myself, with other team members, okay, just go and inform that person. You will travel with them. I'll inform this person, I'll travel with them. They never have to ask.
Yeah.
So it is those sort of things that for me have helped with my current challenges and some of the situations that I have to deal with. Others are different. It has been the sense of, I've had to prove myself in every role that I've been in. And I learned it because I get these results that I thought will be enough, Babsev, to get me like a bursary. That's the story I was sold many years back when I was having to go into university. But it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
They're like, oh no, you did qualify to go to university, but there's never been a student from your school that graduated at UCT. So now I needed to prove that a student from my school can graduate at UCT. And that's why only in my third year was I getting bursaries from those entities that were rejecting me for bursaries in my first year. And so it started feeling like it's a cycle. When I go into the workplace, I must prove that, yeah, I did do those courses, but I can also deliver in the workplace. I'm not going to be the person that makes excuses. I'm not going to drop the ball. That's why I'll work until 8 o'clock to make sure I deliver. But yet it puts me at a physical risk because I have to jump onto a train right after that.
Right. And then these behaviors or these feelings that you can't express in that work environment, someone else is going to get it.
Yes.
Someone else, the explosion is going to happen elsewhere. I think when we have these conversations, I mean, they're important in the sense that we're not saying that, you know, everyone is sick because we've experienced the trauma. What we're saying is we need to be in a position when we acknowledge the impact of these structural, you know, institutionalized systems, ways, the way that our society is still organized in order to perpetuate injustice. And when we have the responses to that, to realize that, you know, actually what I'm experiencing now is not me being wrong. It's me reacting to an abnormal situation. And so when I'm reacting to this abnormal situation, I owe it to myself to either acknowledge this experience and really maybe seek out an understanding as to why am I uncomfortable with this at this particular time. Is it because of an issue around my own insecurities and my own concerns? Or is it really about the system? Is there something that I can do to address the system? Because there can also be a sense of now feeling awful against yourself for not doing something when you've identified that this is something that's actually not healthy and it's potentially quite traumatic, right? So I think we've had a lot to deal with, and I'm really sad that we haven't had a chance to engage with all of the questions that have been put forward by our Twitter guests. But I do encourage you to keep writing the comments. We would receive them at the space between us. They help us to inform the next segments that we prepare so that we create spaces that are conducive, create spaces that are responsive to issues that matter to us, you know, and issues that get us thinking and issues that get us to, you know, flip some of these topics that we thought we had already under wraps, you know, on their head and think differently about our emotional health and well-being. And also kind of becoming aware is always the first intervention we offer. Let's give you information. And I think that's what Babu said. They said in the beginnings, why has someone not said this before? Because then I would have known. So if we at least created that aha moment for someone else also with our space, then I think we've achieved something. And we thank you so much for your openness and your sharing and your being vulnerable with us and just inviting us into your lives in a very different way. And we really appreciate it. And we can only learn and grow from it by having more of these, you know.
Yeah, but also we must thank you for offering the space. Because to us, it's a healing process. You know, and one never finds, as I said, that when we started a space like this where, you know, you could just speak out and talk on these issues. I was saying to you, you know, I visit schools. But when I speak to children and speak to students, I've got to be selective and not cause trauma to them. You know what I'm saying? Just to use the word.
I think when you arrive, Babset, we immediately feel held. And when we both arrived in the room, Katleho and I, starstruck. so no trauma was inflicted.
Exactly.
And none at all.
With the epiphany you've had around the trauma you experienced, I must just tell you, Gugu is a psychologist. They charge by the hour. So the bill is coming. Just be ready. But Gugu, you also owe him for 1976.
An undisclosed amount.
So, you know, there will be an exchange of transactions. Yeah.
Hey, business like a businessman. Can I employ you?
I'm ready. I'm ready, Babset. I'm at your instruction.
Thank you so much for spending time with us in our space.